This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Evan Erickson. A pilot and five passengers aboard a Grant Aviation airplane have not reported any injuries after the plane lost its rear door while flying from Eek to Bethel on Saturday evening. The left passenger door of the Gippsland GA-8 became unlatched and separated from the airplane roughly 5 minutes from Bethel, according to a statement shared by the company on Wednesday. The flight from Eek to Bethel takes around 30 minutes. In the statement, Grant Aviation's Vice President of Commercial Operations, Dan Kanizek, confirmed that the plane was able to safely land in Bethel and that the company was still investigating what caused the accident. National Transportation Safety Board spokesperson Clint Johnson said on Tuesday that the agency is monitoring the situation and has not gotten reports of injuries or damage to the aircraft other than the loss of the door. A Nikolai man has been charged with murder and tampering with evidence in the death of a family member who had previously served as tribal first chief in the Upper Kuskokwim River community. Last week, a Bethel grand jury indicted Robert Alexia on murder charges in the death of Nick Alexia Sr. Alaska State Troopers say they received reports on February 18th that a body later identified as Alexia Sr. was discovered on a trail near the community. He was 81 years old when he died. The following day, they say they arrested Alexia. He is 35 years old. The Tanana Chiefs Conference recently paid tribute on social media to Alexia Sr., who used to be on the Tribal Consortium's Executive Board of Directors and previously served as First Chief of Nikolai. Alexia has been charged with one count of first-degree murder, two counts of second-degree murder, and five counts of tampering with physical evidence. He is currently being held at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Correctional Center in Bethel. The next hearing in his case is set for April 2nd in Bethel Court. State lawmakers had some sharp questions on Monday for Alaska's Division of Elections about its decision to share the state's full, unredacted voter list with the Department of Justice. The state turned over the voter list to the federal government in December after a series of requests from the Department of Justice. That list includes a range of private information about Alaska's voters, including their date of birth, their driver's license or partial social security number, and their address, even if the voter marked it confidential. At a joint meeting of the State House Judiciary and State Affairs Committees, lawmakers asked why Alaska didn't challenge the request. Department of Law attorney Rachel Witte says the state started from the premise that the government was operating in good faith.
We evaluated the request to see whether there was a legal basis for it and determined that we were able to cooperate under state and federal law.
She cited a state law that allows the federal government to access confidential voter information for, quote, governmental purposes. A variety of states have challenged the DOJ's request, including many led by Republicans. Three states have notched early victories in what will likely be a years-long court battle. Lawmakers in the Democratic-heavy bipartisan coalition that controls the House said they were concerned by the Division of Elections' decision to turn over the data. Representative Ashley Carrick, a Fairbanks Democrat, says she's worried the government could misuse Alaskans' personal information.
This is a bell that cannot be unrung. We don't really know what's going to happen with our data in the immediate or longer term future, and the retention of that data is extremely suspect, and Alaska does not have a recourse for that.
But the reaction was mixed. Some Republicans, including Wasilla Representative Steve St. Clair, said they supported the state's decision to share its voter rolls with the federal government.
I don't think they have any nefarious purposes. We have a pretty bad history of protecting our own information, so I don't really see what the issue is with this.
In its agreement with the state, the DOJ said it would notify the Division of Elections of any issues with its voter rolls for compliance with various federal voting laws. The Division of Elections pledged to address any issues identified on the list within 45 days. Division of Elections head Carol Beecher told lawmakers the DOJ had not sent it a list and said that any moves to strike voters from the rolls would follow the state's laws and regulations. Alaska lawmakers are preaching caution as war in Iran and across much of the Middle East pushes oil prices higher. The U.S. oil price benchmark rose $8 between Friday and Tuesday, or about 12%. So far, analysts say it's a relatively moderate reaction from the oil markets, and a prolonged conflict or wider war could push prices even higher. But Senator Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican and co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, says even a short-term bump in oil prices could reduce the amount the state has to draw from savings to make ends meet this year. That could amount to tens or hundreds of millions of dollars that would otherwise come from a dwindling savings account. But Stedman says lawmakers shouldn't count on a sustained price increase.
We don't want to get into a position of overspending in the budget and have a snapback in overly optimistic oil prices. So we want to be a little careful.
Oil prices have an outsized impact on Alaska's budget. It's not the state's largest revenue source anymore, but it's by far the most volatile. A $1 change in oil prices swings the state budget by $25 to $35 million, according to legislative budgeters. House Minority Leader Delaina Johnson, a Palmer Republican, says she's taking a similar view.
If this keeps us from having to go into savings, well, that's great. I don't think we should elevate spending based on the elevated oil prices, though.
Ahead of the session, the bipartisan Democrat-heavy Senate majority listed increasing state revenue as its top goal for the year. Lawmakers are considering a variety of tax proposals to address a long-running structural deficit that emerged when oil prices collapsed in the mid-2010s. Senator Lyman Hoffman, a Bethel Democrat and co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, says lawmakers should remain focused on those efforts to raise revenue.
I think the bigger question is, what are we going to do as a state to balance our checkbook on the long term and address the needs that our citizens expect of us?
Lawmakers are set to receive an updated state revenue forecast in mid-March. This is KYUK News. I'm Evan Erickson. Koihana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yoktun Ganunchuk coming up.